My guest today is Hillary Schneider. Hillary is an equine guided facilitator and mentor, leadership coach, and founder of Epona Rise Retreat Center and Horse Medicine Leadership. For the past 12 years, she has devoted her life and vision in creating a retreat space for people to come and experience the deep teaching and wisdom of horses. Hillary currently resides on an 80-acre retreat ranch in British Columbia, Canada, with a herd of 29 former rescue horses. She continues to dedicate her path to empowering and supporting those called to the partnership of horses and are drawn to learning from and through the wisdom of the horse.
Welcome to Interspecies Evolution. The purpose of this podcast is to highlight human consciousness and how our self-awareness can lead to our honoring animals as conscious beings as well. We have gathered more than 36 people with unique experiences and education, inviting them to share their journeys and how their relationships with animals have changed along the way. If you are seeking inspiration on your own journey of awakening, or simply want to improve your relationships with animals, we invite you to join us, because it is time for Interspecies Evolution. Here's your host, Jenny Jablonski.
Welcome, Hillary, to the podcast.
Thank you, Jenny. Thank you for having me.
Well, you are a pro at podcasts, so I will try to do my best to be a host that elicits from you juicy details that nobody else knows about you.
Perfect.
Now, one of the things that I like to focus on this podcast is the journey, how we got here. And, you know, the messiness that a human journey can be, a journey of awakening. You're so gifted. How did this evolve for you, your intuitive ability, your relationship to the horse? And please share your personal journey as well, not just the horses.
We're born with a sense of knowing and awakening. And I think that as we age and, you know, go through life and have other people question that, I think that starts to disappear because we doubt it, right? So I feel like for me, I remember from a young age, kind of having this knowing about things and awareness that I was always kind of a deep thinker. I think I picked up on things as a kid. You know, I was a highly sensitive child. And I think obviously when you're younger and you don't have people around you to develop that, you start questioning and it doesn't get nurtured, right? So we don't often get nurtured in our gifts. And so I think that definitely probably was the case for me, that you start to kind of shut down as you start to grow up as a child. So I think there definitely was a period where I remember being really young and being tuned in. And I think having an awareness of, like, not just with animals, but just with energies and spirit and stuff like that, like having that sense of things like that. And then I think not nurtured in my, you know, family, you start to shut down and withdraw. And I think that that sort of gets pushed down, right? Or we just don't pay attention. And then I think that it probably, when I was in my 20s, I definitely started to explore more personal development, spiritual awakening, you know, retreats and working with different people. So that was, I would say, kind of like my reopening up to that world was in my early 20s. And I think that there was sort of a natural, maybe curiosity of having like different experiences, especially with animals. You know, I went to school in the breeding industry and I'd have these experiences with the horses here, animals showing up. And so I think there was a part where, you know, I'm not in my family home and I'm in college and I'm starting to get curious about things and kind of paying attention a little bit more to what's happening in connection with what's showing up in my world. And then when I left the breeding industry and I was trying to figure out, like, what am I going to do with my life type of thing? And I stumbled across Lynn Cohen's Stalvequis, because for me, it was like, how do I get back to a career with horses that feels honoring to people and horses? And I had no idea equine facilitation existed. This was in like 2005, 2006. And then I was at what you'd call it, like a conference, and gathered at this conference was a bunch of people in the industry, the equine facilitated learning industry. So Linda Kono was there. Gala had a booth. And there's this artist, Kim McElroy, that was there. And I went to her booth and she had a poster of this retreat happening at the Buffalo Women Ranch in Colorado. And I picked up this poster and I just got goosebumps and I was like, I have to go there. And I was sort of exploring working with Linda. And I think one of the requirements to do her program was you had to go and experience a Epona Quest instructor in order to a program. And they were Epona Quest instructors. So I said, great, this is it. I couldn't go to that retreat, but I emailed them and they said, why don't you come for a private 5-day intensive? And I was like, sure. It was one of those things, like, I think I've always been somebody, whether I logically understand it or not, when I get a feeling, you know, like goosebumps, like I need to do it, I do it. I don't really question that. So I've always sort of been that way. I think to a certain degree, I respond to whether you want to call it intuition or those signs. So I went there and it was like, I think as soon as I got there the first night, like weird stuff started to happen. So like I felt something on my bed and nothing was there. And I had this fear of the dark all the time. And then I remember the first day telling them that. And then Charlie was her name, who's since passed away. But she was like, you know what? I think we're going to get you to talk to the psychic that we talked to, because this, and I was like, okay, first time I talked to a psychic. So they set me up with a call to the psychic. The psychic's like, well, you're very gifted and you're intuitive and all these things. And I'm like, you know, kind of blew my mind a little bit. But for the next 5 days, it was sort of like, I'm around people who believe in this stuff. They got me connected to somebody. And it just was like kind of like a very mind-blowing, life-altering experience. And it just made sense to me, you know, like the things that they were sharing, these kind of otherworldly experiences I was having, it just kind of clicked, right? It was like, oh, I finally found people that kind of understand or are giving me something to explain the things that I'm picking up on, not just, I think, with animals, but just in general, in terms of, you know, connecting with spirit, like all that stuff that would happen to me. And I just had no clue. I would say the 6 months after that, I read a lot of books. I started to look for, you know, intuitive development courses. So I definitely then went and invested in trainings. I did an animal communication program. So I looked at how do I develop this now? Because I really do think that we do have innate sensitivities and intuition, and it is a muscle, and there are practices, and it is helpful to like have somebody help us develop, you know, and to do that. And then at the time too, I had a mentor, and I remember, I think she had a cat at the time, and her cat was like, she's having a hard time with her cat. And I think I offered her something, and she kind of said to me, she's like, Hillary, you know that not all people can connect or get stuff from animals the way that you do. I'm like, what do you mean? You know, I thought that everybody knows that, right? You just meet an animal and you know, like what their personality is or what the energy is. I'm like, that's not normal, or like not everybody. I think you probably, when it's second nature to you, you don't really like, it doesn't commute that, well, not everybody picks up on that. That was like, I think going to courses and having people tell me that was like, oh, okay. So maybe there is something. Maybe I am intuitive and I am getting connected, but I did study. I studied with a shamanic teacher for like a year. I did sort of develop it through courses, teachers, et cetera. And then I think it's a muscle. And I think it's both a muscle. And I think me also believing and acknowledging that we're communicating and we're picking things up. And I think also having that awareness of like what that, how that manifests. Cause I think everybody's ability to connect or be in tune with their intuition manifests differently, right? Like, and so I also read a lot of Doreen Virtue stuff, which I know she's sort of transitioned away from all that stuff, but she was a helpful resource back in the day, you know, in terms of giving language to what does it mean to be clairvoyant and clairsentient and all of that stuff. So, and then I just practiced, you know, I think it was just a matter of practicing. So connecting with other people's animals. I was volunteering at a horse rescue at that point. So going and spending time with the herd and seeing what was coming through. And so I spent a lot of time nurturing then that awareness. And I think that's where it grew and developed over time.
When did you have the sense? Now, I know you had an interest because you went to a program or a workshop where there were people that were doing this. Yeah. When did you feel called to work not just with the animals, but to work with people and guide and coach people.
Yeah. So to be honest with you, there was a large part of my life where I did not have any desire to work with people. And I think that for those of us that work with animals, our entry point usually is with the animals, not with the humans. And I think it was actually, so it was two horses that had passed that kind of came to me in a meditation and basically were like, this is your purpose. And I was a little resistant to that at that point in time, because again, I think that humans are baffling. Like I'm much more comfortable working with animals than people. But the reality is, as you know, humans are connected to animals. And so we can't always bypass the human. And then I think I also started to meet people that were like kind of like my people that I really did start to feel connected to. And so there kind of became a desire of like, I want to help people that maybe are similar to me or have been through things that I feel like I could help. And the horses are also kind of telling me that that's part of my path. It's not just to work with them. I'm in a human body for a reason. And part of that is that kind of bridging between horse and human. So I would say it was a combination of, you know, I think both of meeting people that felt more aligned to how I saw the world. And then also, I think the horses really encouraging me that this is your path. And then I think when I started to explore, you know, the training and the equine experiential learning, and I did a few, I think there was definitely a moment, I remember one of the training where it felt like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. And then I think then there's just a natural, so there was a little bit of that. And then I found that naturally people started to just, you know, friends or different colleagues just sought me out for wisdom, or, you know, there was a natural kind of leaning in that way. So I think like a combination of all of those things kind of led me to, you know, explore what would it look like for me to create a practice where I'm supporting not just horses, but also working with people in particular, I would say women. I shouldn't say that. I don't just work with women anymore, but that's sort of where it started to kind of combine and come together.
I'm very grateful that you have created this academy and are working with the horses in the way that you do work. I very much resonate with your style, your leadership of the herd in so many ways. And yeah. I'd like to give you an opportunity to share with people some of the differences between the retreats and the work that you offer and that of Epona or Egala.
Yeah. Yeah. And the first thing I always like to say, like, I always like to emphasize that I don't kind of claim ownership that it's my philosophy. I think it's really just that what the horses have taught me, you know, and I really try to, it's what that they've taught me. So I don't own kind of this way, I guess, is what I like to sort of offer with that. The difference is like, it's not the human's version of the horse work. It's really trying to capture being in their space and being led by them and holding them in true partnership and not sort of trying to manipulate or control the experiences. And I think to give some context to that, a lot of like when you go through those trainings, it's done in a round pen, you know, with a horse coming into a round pen, and it's very highly activity based, which has its place. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not that I never do exercises, but I think that for me, before I even knew this work existed, I would go and sit in fields with horses and have these amazing experiences. And when I got out of training, I didn't have an arena and I didn't have a round pen. I had a field with some horses in it. And so I was kind of forced to, well, this is what I have to work with. And I think what I discovered was that's just as powerful to just go into a field with some horses. And I always say I have 29 right now, but I say to people, it does not have to be 29. It could be 2. And there would just be things that would happen. And then I think it was listening to the horses. And it took me, by the way, I will say it took me years to have the confidence to do the work in a different way. I think what led to me creative training was as I kind of did, you know, went out into the field and did the work and then led my teacher's program, I saw how traumatizing it was to horses. That didn't sit right with me. Like, this work shouldn't create trauma in horses. And what happened was, having a different program that my teacher's program taught out of my place with my horses, there was a lot of trauma that started to show up with my horses that I was really not okay with. And so I think it was the horses that kind of said, you have to teach it the way that you do this with us. It's really learning, first of all, learning the language of horses, of just horses and horses as prey animals, and how horses exist and be. And I think sometimes that's missing. I think there's a lot of, like, the human's perspective of horses. I'm sure you see this all the time. But understanding and seeing horses through their wisdom and how they would naturally and physiologically operate in herds, being in their space, and knowing that we learn from them. And the benefit, I think, of working with horses is to not be in the human dysfunction. You know, humans are so dysfunctional. So being in a training or a facilitation and in a round pen with an activity, that's a very human thing, right? We're the ones that create that because we like to control everything. We're not great at the unknown. That's not how horses would naturally show up. We receive and also empower horses as a teacher when we come into their environment and their space. And we can sit in a field with horses being horses and receive a lot. And it doesn't have to be more than that. And so I think it's really about empowering that perspective and getting away from how we impose value on doing as humans. I also think that there was never, like, I always get curious when somebody comes to the herd, or like, which horse is showing up for somebody and what's significant about that? And how do we honor that particular horse as a teacher? When you go through training, there's no emphasis on that, of who your horse teacher is or why is that horse there. And I also think, for me, I let the horses choose that because they're smarter than I am, right? Like, I have a bias and I have a filter. Horses read energy a lot better than I do. So I give a lot of choice and I'm like taking their lead as opposed to me trying to lead the space. And so part of when I'm teaching this work, it's teaching others to be in relationship and partnership. I think true partnership with horses from the horse's perspective, not the human's perspective, without compromising safety. You know, like, horses are large prey animals, so we don't have to compromise that. But what it does is it asks us to really let go and shed a lot of our ego need to control, you know, fear of making the experience valuable and conjuring up a type of impact that we think people need to have, and trusting more of, like, the environment and the space that the horses provide. So a lot of, for me, what I do is just bring people out to the herd and see what happens. And I often tell people, I don't know what's going to happen, but we're trusting the horses, and then teaching people how to create that safe space, empowering the horses. And then how do we interpret horse language behavior, both from a horse as a horse and a horse from the intuitive and energetic perspective, right? So I really believe we have to look at both lenses. Like, what's the horse behavior? Is a horse is a horse? And then how do we interpret some of those more intuitive exchanges? Definitely there's horses of mine that will come and do energy work with people or whatnot. But the biggest thing is the horse always has choice. There's consent. I'm teaching people when we walk in there, we have to be self-responsible and we're being led by them. And how do we empower their leadership and their guidance in this work? And then how do we feel empowered in how we interpret and what our leadership is? And then I think the other programs, they teach you how to facilitate exercises, but that's not facilitation skills. It's like to learn how to walk through an activity, because the real life people are going to show up and they're not going to have a clue what that activity is. And so there's, for me, I'm also helping develop people and their ability to, like, read the space and take the horse's cue and be able to lead in the moment. Because you could go out with a horse and say, this is my agenda. That's not how they operate, right? They're going to read with what's coming up. So how do we interpret that, feel confident in our ability to actually facilitate somebody using, I think, leadership and coaching and facilitation skills that isn't dependent on a model or an exercise? How do we empower the horse in that partnership and lead alongside of them with their guidance instead of us projecting the very human control? So that's, like, I also have a podcast that talks a lot about the philosophy. People can go listen to the Horse Medicine Leadership podcast too. And then the business mentorship, because I think the other thing is I'm really want to help people succeed in creating a viable practice in this work. And how do we do that? But that's, I think the biggest difference is like how we hold the horses, how we create space for the work, how we hold it from the horse's way, not the human's perspective of the horse's way. And that just really came, I think, for me listening to the horses over the years. And I think having enough courage to be like, I can offer this in a different way. And I think what often happens is, you know, whether people are coming new to training or they have training, they often say they don't quite resonate with how they were taught how to do it, and something doesn't feel right. And then they stumble upon me and they're like, oh, this is feels more aligned to how they want to be in relationship with the horse. So that's a little bit of like the difference, I think, in how I do the work than what's taught there. And I think it takes a lot of letting go of being in control and trusting the horses, and also being aware of like what our own human dysfunction is in terms of how we want to do things, and staying humble in that, really. Like it's a challenge sometimes, but I think that what I find, and I think what people notice when they come and spend time with my herd, it's like they're choosing to do this work or living in a space where they can take care of themselves and they never have to engage or interact with anyone that they don't want to. And they don't, there's no expectation that they have to be anything than be a horse or be who they are. They don't have to perform. There's not an activity they have to do. We just get to be in their space and learn from them. And so I think that's powerful for people, because I think we also do it to ourselves. So that's a little bit of horse medicine leadership. Yeah.
One thing that came to mind while you were speaking is that if we choose to be facilitators, or if we are just participating in a retreat that you are facilitating, one of the keys there is for the facilitator to be able to be just that, a good messenger, to be able to interpret not only the body language and the herd interaction. Yes. But at this level of horse medicine leadership, we're talking about energy field. We're talking about conscious communication. Yes. We're talking about the horses reading the human and knowing and understanding what is at the core, or what might possibly be at the core or several layers down.
Yes.
Beyond what we think we're intellectually bringing into the pasture, why someone like myself or someone else might come to work with you. And so to help a person, or hold a person in, I think your language would be to hold a person in such a way that you support them fine-tuning that skill within them.
Yes.
That is a tremendous gift.
Because
there aren't a lot of people that have that ability. And that's just true. Just like one of your first, you know, people who said to you when you read The Cat, you know, this is very rare.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's huge. And I think that's like, we call it like the self-leadership. There's the high expectation when I'm refining or supporting people of like the work that we have to do internally and how we hold ourselves in relationship, that I think is really important, you know, and you would know that too, as being somebody who holds space for other people in that way. I think that that muscle and that ability and capacity and awareness is really important, because we can really muddy the waters when we don't do that. Right.
And if for whatever reason, we haven't gone on a healing journey ourselves, and we all have filters.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I think it's like, there's never expectation. I think we just have to know that as a human, we're always going to have a bias and a filter. We're always going to have baggage. I always say we're all varying degrees of dysfunction, and that's just the truth of being a human. But I think the more self-aware and introspective and reflective in doing our work are, the less likely that we're going to cause harm unconsciously with that, right? So it's like, we need to know what we're packing around and how to manage that. And I think that self-awareness, self-healing work is ongoing. Like, it never stops, right? You don't get to a place where you're completely healed from anything. I think that's the human journey. So I think it's always being conscious of like, what am I traveling with right now? What's in my space, so that I know how to create some boundaries. I need to do my work, so I can show up as clean as I possibly can with other people, knowing that I'm also a human. But I think that's really important, is that we do our We do our work. We do our work. Yeah.
And that is one of the primary purposes of this podcast, is to encourage people to ask these questions and to do something, not necessarily defining what that something might be, but in giving people options and different perspectives about what that might look like. And I certainly myself lean toward the more organic, intuitive, free interaction as opposed to processes, because here we are as a society and processes basically have gotten us where we are today. So I really feel strongly that the type of horse medicine leadership that you offer is one that if someone dedicates enough time to it, the shifts and changes can be just remarkable. Huge.
And that's what I hear as feedback, like from the people that are in the program. They often say that what they have to work through by being in that program translates everywhere. It's not just, you know, learning to be a facilitator of their work. They're being asked to, because that's always a byproduct, but there's a high degree where I'm asking people like to graduate and to be a facilitator, you have to do your work, that they'll say it shows up in their current job, in their relationships, in how they hold themselves, because I think that work transfers everywhere. And it does, and gives you the tools and the awarenesses that we don't always, you know, I think that's one of the things we need to sometimes be given, those awarenesses and perspectives and tools in order to support that. But yeah, I think absolutely it translates kind of everywhere, not just in the development of being a good facilitator or partner with horses. Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the many concerns I have, not only about this industry, this realm within the equine world, but the metaphysical world and certainly animal communication, animal healing, is how people treat people.
Yes.
And I came to this from a human journey and being told I was a healer and I should do the work. And I kept saying, no, 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 I need to do more work before I do the work. Yeah. And thank goodness I did that. I was just interviewed earlier today and asked a question about the use of horses in equine facilitated programs. And I know you and I spoke, I think it was maybe 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, we spoke at length about this concern. And I think you and I have both had somewhat similar experiences in that multiple times a month, someone will call and say, I am a human being and I just went through a coaching facilitation course or a certification course and I'm traumatized. I'm traumatized because of the way the human treated me and other people in the class. And I'm traumatized because the human facilitating the class, caretaking the horses, wasn't showing up in a way that a lot of people in the class knew that the horses needed. And many of us in the class knew that the horses were in pain or didn't want to do the work. And so you and I are faced with these conversations constantly. And just today I was asked this question and I thought, it's no coincidence that I'm going to be talking to Hillary this afternoon. And I think that your program can provide a respite for people who have had those experiences, who know there's something more. Again, sometimes the processes work for certain people, but I think there are many people out there who are transitioning, who are curious, but who are very skeptical too. Skeptical of the extremely, let's say, spiritual side of things where I land a little bit more, you know, and you bring a wonderful intellect and ability to communicate humility, authenticity to the intuitive work as well. Yeah. So if you're comfortable, Hillary, would you speak to some of the concerns you saw? What happened with your own horses? What made you uncomfortable? And this conversation, it's a very important.
So, and again, I'm always like super careful about like, first of all, I'm not going to say who it was or anything like that, because that's not the purpose of it. But I will say it's rampant. Like, I can't tell you how many people that I end up mentoring or whatever that come with trauma from their teachers in this work. I definitely can talk about that piece. And also, I feel like there is sometimes when we're mentoring or teaching, there's this whole like wounded aspect of, I really try in my program to say to people, I'm a human being. And I also never want anyone to elevate me on this pedestal because I'm their teacher, that there needs to always be, they get to give me feedback. If I say something in a way that triggers them or is not okay, that they get to have that conversation with me. And I think that's really important, that we don't take advantage of that power And also, I always usually, now my program, you have to come to a training retreat before you can progress through the program so that we make sure it feels aligned all the way around. And so that's important to me, I think. But I just want to like say, like, I hear that a lot, like that's, and again, humans being dysfunctional humans. That's why I think working on ourselves is so important, because, and also knowing as a teacher or mentor, I need to be still working on myself, like never get to a place where I feel like I know everything and I'm doing everything perfectly. So, but I always give room for like the people I'm mentoring, like you need to always know that you can give me feedback too. And this is not a power dynamic of dysfunction. I think in terms of like, so like where I saw trauma in my horses, like through this stuff. So I'll give a couple of examples because I think every horse has a different trauma response, just like every person does. It's really important to know where we start to see signs of distress. And I would sort of say also that when I'm doing any exercise or activity, and my horse is still a choice, and I have horses that love that stuff to teach. I never start with that, by the way. But I always say to people, if we ever see a sign of a horse in distress, we stop things immediately. So we never, ever, ever do things for the human benefit and ignore the horse signals. I think sometimes what happens is that gets lost. So we're so focused on giving the human the powerful experience. We're not watching the horse, and the horse becomes a tool. And so I think that I was helping teach a different program. There was signs of distress of my horses that were getting missed that I had to advocate for. That was really painful for me. But I had for my mare, for example, she just wouldn't have anything to do with the group. So her, she's very clear about that. If I don't like your energy, I'm not participating. And I was okay. I was like, and my teacher was like, what's wrong with her? And I said, well, there's actually nothing wrong with her. I'm not forcing her. One of my geldings started to bite people because he was really annoyed at what was happening. So, and this one was probably the hardest for me that still sometimes gets me emotional. We had split the group and I was in my round pen with one of my teachers and the other teacher was doing an obstacle course with one of my horses, and I walk out and I see he's on three legs. Okay. He's dead lame and he is being dragged through an obstacle course. And I was like, what the hell is going on? He's lame. He had abscessed. So they had pulled him out of the field. I was not. So this is like, it killed me. Cause I was like, I couldn't. And they're dragging him and forcing him and he's lame. He's physically lame. He's not sound. And that was sort of like one of the things to me that was like, this is not okay. I'm like, this is a physically lame horse. I think part of why he abscessed was there was so much not good things happening that emotionally that was him processing what he was taking on from the group. What ended up happening was I think I had at that point 7 horses. We ended up having 2 that we could work with because I would not let any that could handle. And even that, but the rest of them, I'm not traumatizing these horses. I couldn't say it in that way. You know, I couldn't. And that was hard too, because I think what was the most challenging for me, I really respected my teachers. And to see that happening where they couldn't see what was happening to the horses and not understand was really difficult. And then I felt incredibly guilty, you know, and then that really what led me to do the program. I was like, never again. So it manifested physically, it manifested emotionally, different horses manifested different things. And then I had to set the boundary and just say, these horses are not participating anymore. I did really like have that conversation with my horses because it was sort of this tricky situation where they're running a training. I can't midway through the training say, I'm not doing the train. So I committed to it. And I had a conversation and 2 of my horses, one who I still have, one who's since passed, they were like, we can hold this with you. So I tried to give and listen and advocate and honor as best as I possibly could within the circumstances. And 2 of my geldings were like, we can handle this with you and we can do this. So they were able to like, whether they had the tools, I think sometimes, and I see this still like even in my herd, there are horses that are like cute because, like, for example, I have a gelding who I do a lot of work with the First Nations community now, and he had a retreat where he spent a lot of time with this youth, a lot of time, probably 3 days every day. And I think he's a empath. All horses are empaths, but he's like, I think he took a lot from that youth and he abscessed. So he had to cycle that through his system. So that I still see that happen and I had to support him. But I do find there are horses that know how to not do that. And sometimes that's part of the conversation. First of all, I never want to ever put my horse in a situation where they feel they have to do that. And if I notice, well, they're like people, we do that sometimes too. We have a lot of empathy for somebody going through something. So we want to take some of that on. But I might say, you don't have to do that. They also know how to cycle through. I had to, in that circumstance, be the advocate for some of my horses that were not able to do that and were not being heard in their stress and their trauma, and then do the best I could with the two that were left that said, we can do this. But that's how that manifested. It was very traumatizing for me on multiple levels. And then that was where it's like, I can't have them teach this anymore. And second of all, the horse are like, this is why you have to teach a different way, because this is what's happening. And I didn't see that when I was going through training, right? But I have a very different way that I'm in relationship with my horses. I think we never, ever should be doing anything at the expense of the horse for the human at all. And I don't think we need to. So that's how that manifested at that point for them. Now they're all okay now. Like, it didn't linger, but that was a very hard thing for me to process and be with.
A very long, very expensive workshop once that included equine facilitation. And the woman that was the facilitator was proud that her horse would push people down or bite people. And I could hear her telepathically saying, you know, to pick this person or that person because she had it in for someone. So there are really, truly a lot of people who aren't just on a journey of awakening and a healing journey and are legitimately being triggered and doing their best to heal. There are some people who are traumatized and they're just darn bullies out there. And 100%. I think that's what's giving this a bad name.
100%. And I also, like, we just had this conversation where it's like it's not okay for my horses to bite or trample anyone. But if they're getting to a point where they're escalating, first of all, you have to know why that's happening. And part of my role as a facilitator, like, so for example, I have two geldings who, if somebody is not listening to their boundaries, most of my horses, because I'm in a field, they'll just walk away, right? They just take their space. Two of my geldings will escalate like they would with a horse. You're not listening. I'm going to pin my ears, then I'm going to bite you. I know this about these two horses. So if I see somebody who's not picking up on the dialogue that they're actually intruding into that horse's space, and I have to be the translator of that so it doesn't escalate to that point. And I don't expect people to know that because, you know, we're not always aware. But that's my job, you know, to never put a person or one of my horses in a situation where there's a safety compromise because we're not listening. We're not in mutual respect with one another. And we don't know how to interpret the communication that's happening from the horse. We know that a horse isn't just going to bite for no reason. They don't just start that way. But I think I always say we need to ask and be in mutual respectful relationship together. And that includes sometimes finding, like, where do we both feel safe to coexist with each other? And how do we know where that is? So, but that's where I think it's important for people to know how to pick up on those cues of a horse and what that means and how to interpret that. There is a lot of things that are not okay, but you probably see this in the horse industry. I say that a lot of horse people do know nothing about horses and know nothing about horse language and behavior because we're not taught that, right? We don't get taught how to be in relationship with a horse as a prey animal or what that looks like. So there's a lot of, you know, not great things that are happening out there in relationship to that.
Well, I'm going to have all of your information, Hillary, in the podcast notes, of course.
Yeah.
Can you share just a little bit about the retreats that you do offer, the experiential retreats before you get to the level of the academy?
Sure. Yeah. So there's definitely, like I say, there's a couple of buckets in what I do in my work. One of them is the horse medicine leadership training, but I also do retreats for women. And like I said, I've been doing a lot of work with the First Nations community. So these are for also people that are not necessarily horse people, but feel drawn to, I think, being in a teaching space with the energy and wisdom of horses, and that are wanting to work on their own personal development. I think we can learn a lot about our self-awareness and, like you said, our awakening when we're with horses. And I think the reason for that is it's pure, it's unbiased. And I do think part of like the, this is just my own interpretation. I do think horses support the elevating of human consciousness. I really do. So I think when we're with them, it shifts something in our awareness to be in their energy. And so I do like yearly women's retreats, that group retreats for women that want to come and be in the space of horses. And for me, it's like coming into the space of the herd. And what do they have to teach us? And I don't always know what that is, right? What the teaching is with each group, because it really depends on their energy. But it is like, how do we become more in tune with our intuition? How do we be more in tune with our own cycles and rhythms, our nervous system? How do we step into a space and be supported and held by an energy, especially for women? We hold so much. What are we navigating internally that we need to work on that the horse is going to mirror for us, so we can be more aware of what is the thing that we're being asked to look at? And then I also do private retreats as well for people that want to come out and just have a one-on-one immersive experience with myself in the herd. And really, it's just kind of working with each person of what is it that you're coming with that you want to work on? And then we set the space for that to happen with the herd. A lot of, I guess, the women that I work with are women that are very interested in that self-awareness. They want to be more aware of what's going on. There's something they feel like they have to work on. And I think they're ready for, as you know, you can't hide from a horse. So I think that when you come into the space with the horses, you have to be ready to confront what's there to confront and for you to work on, because they're not going to coddle you and they're going to show you this is what you need to, you know, to sit with or be aware of. And so I think when we're ready to hold accountability on that, to do our healing, because I think we have to be ready to do our healing, that's the space that will be offered. I also do a little bit of like for women that are coaches or leaders too, that are wanting to work on their ability to read energy better, read space better of their clients. Because I think nothing can teach you that better than horses, because they're masterful at reading space and reading energy. And I think that we get that feedback in a way that it's palpable, right? When you see a horse reflecting something back to you so obvious, it's like, oh, that's what I'm reading. Or that really want to work on their own, I call it leadership range, where we have places in ourselves that we're comfortable being in and places that we're not. And one of the things that my horses have taught me is to be in the full range of who you are as a human. Have your reconciliation with the parts of you that maybe you don't want to be or that feel uncomfortable. Especially as a facilitator, I can't be one-dimensional. I have to be able to, if I need to be fierce with someone, I have to be fierce with someone or be nurturing. And my horses have really helped me lean into, you show up the way you're feeling called to show up with a person, but you got to do your work around the places that you don't want to show up in yourself. And so helping other women that are in, like not even just with horses, but just with other people, of how do I come into balance or harmony with the aspects of my own leadership or myself that are uncomfortable for me, so I can show up more fully for my people. And so like, those are some of the things that I work on with humans. So you don't have to want to do this work to get the benefit of learning from the horses. That's just one of the things that I do. So that kind of encompasses like what I do in my practice, and then the horse medicine leadership. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, the next time we meet, it will be in person.
Yes.
At your place next year. And I look forward to it.
I look forward to finally getting to do this in person. That's amazing. And yeah, I can't wait to see what the horses, your connection with them too. I can't wait to witness that and experience that and, you know, get to receive you in person too. So I think that'll be a gift for all of us.
And I get to meet your little one.
Yes, yes, you will. Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Hillary. I send you so much gratitude and love and appreciation and best wishes on your childbirth. And
yes.
I know it's going to be a magical time for you and your husband.
Yes, likewise. And I'm glad we could make this happen. And it's an honor being here with you.
Thank you very much. Take care. And to the audience, I invite you to return again next week for another conversation with me, because now is the time for interspecies evolution. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional, medical, psychiatric, or veterinary advice. Our conversations are based on our life's experiences. We intend this podcast to be complementary and supportive. It is not intended to be a substitute for traditional medical, psychiatric, or veterinary care. If you need a doctor, a psychiatrist, or a veterinarian, please contact one immediately.